You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. When the book about Jolo was written a few years ago, it was not just a bestseller. It actually opened up our eyes on how storytelling can be done, not just bland, vanilla kind of reporting. Co-authors Bradley Hope and Tom Wright actually reinvented or reignited the whole story of how financial drama can take place and transpire right before our eyes. Right now, today, we have Tom Wright, one of the two co-authors of the story about Joe Lo. This time round, he is a podcaster. Tom Wright is, of course, the co-founder of Project Brazen Content Studio, talking about his latest project, which is the Fat Leonard podcast. How are you, Tom?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Yeah, the last time we spoke, I was actually taken aback by the kind of drama that transpired when you were writing about the book. But right now, I'm again kind of shocked at the kind of items that took place. And, you know, just to put things in perspective, a lot of Malaysians are not even aware of Fat Leonard. I was only aware because the news broke out and I was a newsman then and I had to do the news. But since then, you know, it has slipped off my consciousness and I didn't want to even think about it. I didn't even know about the whole, progress of it. Until, of course, I saw your tweet, which talks about Fat Leonard in your podcast. So let's do a little bit of a recap about some of the things that have changed and many others that have not changed when it comes to writing about or doing a project about financial drama and financial, I guess, theft at epic proportions. What has changed from the work that you've done during your time at Wall Street Journal versus your job right now, which is at Project Brazen?
Well, I think, Ibrahim, the reason you haven't heard about Fat Leonard is because he was arrested almost 8 years ago now in the US in San Diego. And the story is so unbelievable. The corruption that Leonard was involved in inside the US Navy was so embarrassing to the US government that I think they've really tried to cover it up and push it under the carpet. And that's why you haven't heard that much about it. Let me just quickly recap for your viewers what transpired. In the 80s, Leonard became what's called a husbanding agent for the US Navy. He would provide food, fuel, and security. He was from Penang. He became exorbitantly wealthy in the years after September the 11th because the US Navy was very worried about Al-Qaeda terrorist attacks on its ships, and Leonard would help protect them. Long story short, he ends up living in a $170 million Singapore mansion with 20 luxury cars. And then the corruption part of his scheme starts to ramp up, which is to get the contracts to give fuel, food, and security to the ships. He would take officers to brothels. He would put on parties with them involving prostitutes, fine dining, holidays for their wives, et cetera, et cetera. And he really, really corrupted a huge number of Navy officers inside the fleet. And then finally, he was arrested in 2013. Since then, he's been cooperating with the US government and is yet to be sentenced. And he has never talked until this moment. He talked exclusively to me for over 20 hours for this podcast. And the reason he's doing so is he believes there's been a cover-up and he believes that he's been hard done by the US government. And so that's why he's talked to me.
Okay, that's exactly the point I'm trying to get at. Because the last time you wrote about a particular story, you chose the medium of a book. The Billion Dollar Whale, of course, ended up being a bestseller, eventually being turned into a screenplay and eventually a movie, hopefully. But now you chose the medium of podcast. So why podcast when it comes to Fat Leonard?
One thing we're doing at Project Brazen, it's a company that Bradley Hope, with whom I wrote Billion Dollar Whale, and I set up, is to create brilliant ongoing narrative stories, so stories that are still happening today, and that's true of Fat Leonard because he hasn't yet been sentenced. And we believe podcasts are the best way, or one of the best ways, to get those stories across. We're also doing books and other kinds of material, but we think podcasts is a very exciting way. And you know, in Asia, people are just getting into podcasts. It's quite a new medium to listen to, but it's extremely exciting. Leonard has a fantastic voice. He sounds, you know, a bit like Marlon Brando. He's got this, even though he's from Malaysia, he's got this American accent. He's a Eurasian, by the way, partly Scottish, partly Portuguese, Sri Lankan, Tamil, a mixture of things. He's a great raconteur, as you'll see. The two episodes are already out, and a third episode dropping this week. He really carries the story, but he's also a con artist. So you'll see along the way that I'm very careful to make sure that I corroborate all the details that he gives us. For example, he talks about going on missions with the U.S. Navy to fight Abu Sayyaf in the Philippines, the Al-Qaeda affiliated group. And he had his own warship called the Braveheart. So we actually checked out whether he went on those missions with former U.S. Navy officers. So everything we do in the podcast, just like Billion Dollar Whale, is checked out. And Leonard really was very powerful inside the U.S. Navy. That's why when they arrested him, they were very careful to shield some of the top admirals from too much scrutiny, because it's such an embarrassment for the U.S. Navy.
All right, so I had a listen to the first two episodes. It's kind of a shock disbelief, but at the same time, I'm really captivated on the whole storytelling process. I was driving home while listening to the podcast. I stayed in the car, even though I've reached home to just finish that particular podcast. That kind of shows the kind of captivating type of storytelling that you presented. It must be quite tedious in terms of trying to not only get the story right and accurate, and there's a whole element of you keep repeating to the audience that it's our job to keep our toes to keep us alert, because not everything can be true. But at the same time, it's highly produced. So talk to us through the process of creating such a heavily produced podcast.
Well, the key to any good podcast is to get a lot of what we call anchor audio. You need good audio. So I have, like I said, over 20 hours of talking with Leonard. Leonard was in house arrest, or is in house arrest, in San Diego, where he's been for 8 years, jail and now house arrest. He's got cancer, kidney cancer, and I believe he's dying from that, which was another reason that he was willing to talk. He's not allowed to talk, by the way, under his plea deal with the U.S. government. So it's an extraordinary situation that he would do so. So if you get all that audio, then you need to, the way that a podcast works is, this is a narrative nonfiction podcast, so it's almost like listening to a radio play. We have sound effects. You know, when Leonard gets involved in an armed robbery when he's a young child, which is in episode two, we recreate the scene as if you're there, as if you're living there. And so we really hope that audiences in Asia will resonate with that and be able to really get into the story. And then, of course, we cut it up with lots of other voices. The episode that airs this week, we talked to a woman called Paula Coughlin, who was a whistleblower in a sexual assault scandal in the U.S. Navy from 30 years ago. So we go back in history. We look at why is the Navy got this problem with misogyny? Why are admirals sleeping with prostitutes put on by Leonard? And then we try to get into Leonard's motivations. Like, why is he talking? What is he trying to achieve from this? Because, again, that also is very unclear to us.
All right. Taking a step away from the whole production, the podcasting, there is a lot of similarities that I noticed between Fat Leonard with Joe Lo. Both of them are from Penang and all that demography type. That is not the point I'm trying to drive at. But they are both, appealing to very high-ranking officials. They have a larger-than-life kind of lifestyle, opulence, grandiosity, and all the other adjectives that I can use right now, nouns that I can use right now. They are, something like straight out of a fairy tale, so to speak. Why do you feel that when you talk about con artists, people like Joe Lo, who is still a fugitive at large, and Fat Leonard, they have these kind of similarities? And why are people of power continuously drawn to such a character?
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, I think there are some differences between Leonard Francis and Joe Lo. Joe Lo was a full 100% con artist. Let's remember, Joe Lo did not produce anything. There was supposed to be a financial district in Kuala Lumpur, but really he didn't do anything. I think with the 1MDB money, it was purely raised and stolen. And Joe Lo's now on the run, presumed to be in China. Leonard Francis, I mean, he was a really skilled operator. He was able, he had 180 ships of his own. He serviced the U.S. Navy for 30 years. He protected the fleet. He made sure, when the U.S. Navy wanted to send an aircraft carrier to India, to Chennai, they couldn't find one husbanding agent to do the job in India. So Leonard, he sailed through a cyclone across the Indian Ocean to do that job. So he did a good job. But then he ended up just taking out too much money. He realized that the U.S. Navy didn't really care, wasn't doing due diligence on its invoices. And so he started to overcharge everywhere. And that's how he ended up living in a $170 million Singapore mansion, right? So Leonard's much more like the kind of con artist that's more typical. Somebody like, Bernie Madoff, who Bernie Madoff had a real business, and then it became a pyramid scheme. These things accelerate over time, whereas Jolo, I think, is just a pure con artist from the cradle to the grave, you know.
I can see the dissimilarities there. But let's talk about the kind of implications that is resonating from this. There's a reason why he's not being sentenced, even though he has pleaded guilty. There's a reason why some of the admirals are shielded from the persecution, but he's being chased after by the FBI, or still is. There's a line in the podcast which keeps on being repeated. If they go after all the admirals that is implicated with the kind of things that Fat Leonard did, there wouldn't be any more admirals left to run the Navy. So how profound, how deep is this kind of criminal scheme that Fat Leonard is involved in?
Well, there was the inner circle of people. These are the Navy and the Justice Department in America has indicted around 30 Navy officers, as well as people from Leonard's company and other people. Those people were definitely in the inner circle. You know, some of them have pleaded not guilty, and their trials are still ongoing. And that's why Leonard hasn't been sentenced yet, because he's a star witness in their trials. You know, some people took envelopes of cash in hotels in Singapore in return for passing business Leonard's way. Other people went to parties and sat with prostitutes. For the admirals, you know, they would, some of them, this is what Leonard told investigators in the US, they would come in on their aircraft carriers, like the Nimitz or other ships, and they would go to these $1,000 a plate Michelin star dinners. They would be entertained with prostitutes. And they would then give Leonard what's called Bravo Zulu letters, which are commendation letters, and that gave him top cover to continue. So when, you know, how did Leonard get arrested? Well, a lot of whistleblowers started to raise questions inside the Navy about his high costs, and this is going back, you know, 15 years ago. But they didn't get anywhere, because Leonard really had the top cover of admirals, and all those investigations came to naught, because the admirals were enjoying, you know, the parties, the prostitutes. And then also Leonard was doing a good job protecting the fleet and doing, you know, his husbanding job was top notch. And so that's why this scheme rolled on for so long.
Why was he, you know, in a kind of disbelief or disappointed that he was arrested? Didn't he see this coming? Because in one of the episodes, I'm not too sure, episode one or two, you know, he was like kind of upset more than anything else that he was being arrested. I can't wrap my head around this whole story.
Well, it's a great point, Ibrahim. It's exactly what I was just saying. He was embedded with the Navy. He was going on Al-Qaeda missions to fight Al-Qaeda, the Abu Sayyaf in the Philippines. He was, as I said, sailing across the Indian Ocean to work for them in India. He was doing so many different kinds of jobs. He was helping to get Navy personnel out of jail or out of trouble when they sexually molested women in bars and ports. He was doing all kinds of, he was a bagman for them to help open up Bali, the port in Bali. He would pay bribes for the Navy. So all these kind of things really made him embedded with the Navy. And then on top of all of that, he was organizing orgies involving Navy officers in the MacArthur Suite, which is, you know, in the Manila Hotel, which is at the beginning of episode one. So all those things taken together, plus his friendships with admirals, he just thought he was untouchable. So even when the Navy was finally able to bring him down, and we should talk about how they were able to do that, he still didn't realize he was going to get arrested.
What is the end objective here of you doing this podcast? What do you intend to achieve when it comes to talking about this, making this story and making the audience or the public aware of the shenanigans that Fat Leonard did?
Well, we really wanted to uncover what really happened. The Washington Post has done a really good job of covering this, and also talking a little bit about the different treatment for admirals over ordinary officers. But nobody had been able to explain until now, how did Leonard really get arrested? Because, you know, he had this top cover. Nobody was taking the complaints about his overcharging seriously. We were able to find, and we will reveal in 2 weeks in episode five, we have one episode coming out every Tuesday. In 2 weeks in episode five, we will reveal how Leonard was finally brought down. And it's an amazing story involving a Navy wife who was beaten by her husband and then complained about her husband, to the NCIS, who are the naval investigators and of the famous TV show. And we will show, you know, for the first time over the last few episodes from then, how Leonard was entrapped. And that story has never been told. And that there's really this whole theme of misogyny in the Navy, which is very strong in our podcast, not only through that woman who helped bring Leonard down, but also an amazing story about how Leonard would have children with various girlfriends around Asia, and then he would take the children. And we also profile in one of our episodes one of the girlfriends and her attempts to see her children after over a decade. So there's this whole very, very troubling, dark theme of misogyny in Fat Leonard.
So what is in store for potential listeners of the Fat Leonard podcast? What hasn't been told yet that you are willing to share right now?
Well, episode 4, which is next Tuesday, we deal with his amazing role in national security. As I said, like his warship.
National security.
Yeah, national security, which means, you know, how he helped the U.S. achieve certain national security objectives and his sort of how embedded he was with the Navy. Episode 5, which is in 2 weeks, deals with the Navy wife who helped to bring him down. Episode 6 is to do with his children and his girlfriends. And then episode 7, 8, and 9, running up until the end of November, deal with the end game. You know, Leonard, for the audience who don't know this, actually corrupted an NCIS officer, a guy called John Beliveau. So he had a mole inside the investigation that was looking into him. And so that creates an incredible situation that we delve into in the last few episodes as well.
You see, this is a story where, you know, many years ago, I was in the gym, I was listening to you on the Slate Money podcast. It was just because I'm a subscriber of the Slate Money podcast, and you're like, oh, Tom Wright is doing this. The folks on the podcast kind of not believe the things that Jolo did. I can imagine why or how people might not, I mean, they do believe because of the due diligence that you have done, but the kind of extraordinary tale that these folks have done, it's just unbelievable, right? I mean, it's the 21st century, everybody would be cross-checked with one another. Surely these things would be unearthed eventually, and yet people still do this. So I'm not too sure why or how, or what's the learning process that we can take from this. Is it, better, I guess, oversight between the Justice Department, not just in the US, but, you know, across all the other countries? Is it, you know, better, elected officials to look into this? What kind of learnings can we take from this?
Well, you know, you live in a country where a man who's been convicted for his crimes involving 1MDB is back as a, you know, as a, an advisor to the government. It's very easy to become extremely cynical when you cover how the world really works. You know, powerful people are able to remain powerful because they're part of a network that protects each other. And that's exactly the same thing in the US Navy in this case. I think that they have not properly had a proper investigation into its very, very top ranks that allowed Leonard to, you know, Leonard wasn't just corrupting a handful of people and then scampering off and then being arrested. He was embedded in the Navy and as I said, had top cover. And so, you know, why have more admirals not been punished for their role in allowing this to go on for so long? And like, as I said, he also served a function. You know, he was able to do something that not a lot of people were able to do, which was to get the, you know, for example, when a ship comes into port, an aircraft carrier, it needs something called a Yokohama fender, which is a huge buoy that protects the boat from banging into the, into the side. And you'd have them for small boats, but this is for a $20 billion aircraft carrier. Leonard was the only person in the Pacific who had a supply of those. So, you know, he was effective at his job. And that's one reason it went on for so long. But also, when everyone's benefiting from corruption, when, you know, people are enjoying parties and prostitutes and the like, there was no incentive for it to stop, right? I think that's a short answer.
Yeah. You can take a listen to the Fat Leonard podcast, wherever you get the podcast. I listen on it on Apple Podcasts, but it's also on Spotify and everywhere else. We'll go for a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Tom Wright of Project Brazen. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me the co-founder of Project Brazen, Tom Wright, dialing in from Singapore. Tom, let's talk a little bit more about Project Brazen itself. This is just a continuation of the kind of projects that you guys have done, from the Billion Dollar Whale that we're all too familiar with, to Blood and Oil, talking about MBS, or Mohammed bin Salman's quest for global dominance. And quite recently, he just bought Newcastle, apparently. And now, of course, Fat Leonard. It seems like it's from one very disbelieving story to another. how many disbelieving stories can we get right now? Because it's just, you know, breathtaking from one project to another.
Well, I think there's no limit to the amount of amazing stories that there are out in this world. I mean, especially now that there's so much money sloshing around the global economy. I feel like, you know, since the global financial crisis and this era of very cheap money that we're living in, that, you know, in terms of financial scams, at least, there's just so much cash around, and that fuels greed and that fuels crazy stories. If you look at the Fat Leonard scandal, now that the context of that is September the 11th, obviously after the attack on the Twin Towers, the Bush administration had no limit to what it wanted to spend to protect America and to go after Al Qaeda. So Leonard really became extremely wealthy in those years after that. He produced something called the Ring of Steel, which was a steel barriers that he would put, steel barges that he would moor down around on the water side of aircraft carriers to protect them from a terrorist attacks. And he would charge, you know, $1 million for that service for each ship. That's how he amassed so much money. So yeah, I think it's this era we live in of incredible wealth, and it leads to hucksters basically. And there's so many of them around. If you can find the right stories, then you can tell them.
Was it a hard decision to leave the Wall Street Journal and do this?
Yeah, it was difficult. I mean, I was at the Journal for over 20 years, at the Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal for a long time, and it's a great newspaper. One thing that I learned working there was this idea about how important it is to really nail down what you're talking about, and to really know your sources and to know your details, and then to build out your structure from there. And I think that's why, you know, Project Brazen, we have a reputation for telling the truth and for doing stories that are, that, you know, people who listen to them can believe that this definitely happened, and this is the truth, basically, at least as close to the truth as journalists can ever get.
Yeah, and it's also your background as well, because just like the Fat Leonard in the first few minutes of the first episode, you were talking about, you know, the fact that you acquainted with the US, the fact that you are living in Asia for the longest of time, the fact that, you know, you're very familiar with Malaysia, the fact that you can speak a little bit of Bahasa Malaysia as well, Bahasa Indonesia. It all brings that kind of camaraderie or rapport with the subject. And in quite all honesty, a lot of shenanigans do happen in this part of the world because of our, I guess, burgeoning democracy and all this other stuff in between. Do you feel that this is the place to be? And not just in Southeast Asia, but, you know, Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia right now. This is where it starts when it comes to these kind of storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, I chose to live in this part of the world a long time ago. I first came to live in Bandung in Indonesia to teach English in 1993. So for me, Southeast Asia is home. I recently moved to Singapore from Hong Kong after 7 years there. And Southeast Asia, if it's a place, seems like home to me. But yeah, I mean, I don't think the stories of fraudsters are just only found in Southeast Asia. I mean, obviously you can find those everywhere. Look at Wirecard, for example. That's an amazing story that broke. And, you know, in America, in Europe, I mean, fraud is transnational. I mean, and it's happening in a small group of people, I think, and maybe not small, but like an elite of people who really do actually cross boundaries. And I think that's what we're tapping into with a lot of the stories that we do.
So my final question to you is this. Do you fear not just legal repercussions, but something even more disastrous than that? Because you're covering stories that, you know, cover the rich and famous, cover the powerful. What kind of protection do you have when it comes to not just your, you know, legal protection, but, you know, personal safety as well? It's an honest personal question, to be frank.
No, I think the key is a great question. I think the key to what we do is that we're always extremely fair. You know, we don't cut corners, we don't threaten, we just cover what's happening by, being as even-handed as possible. So, you know, Leonard, for example, my relationship with Leonard got very testy towards the end. And you'll hear, if you listen to the end of the first episode, you can hear him saying, "Are you judging me? Are you my judge?" And the reason for that is because I had to question him about, you know, his treatment of women, the treatment of his girlfriends, the issue with his children, and some very, very difficult subjects that I found extremely troubling. And so, yeah, you do get into these very difficult situations as a journalist. But I think if you just carry yourself in a way that, you know, you're not threatening people, you're just telling stories and doing it as even-handedly as you can, then I think that's how you protect yourself.
Fantastic. What's next for you, Tom?
Well, we've got an amazing book that Bradley's working on. It's called Project Pegasus, or at least that's the working title. It's about some Korean Americans who tried to bring down the North Korean government with the help of the CIA, and are now sort of on the run from the FBI. So that's an amazing story that we've got. And then we've got a slew of other projects that we're working on in entertainment. Some of them actually softer. Some of them are not to do with financial crime. They're to do with entertainment. They're to do with we've got a spy series we're working on. So yeah, no, we're extremely excited.
For those watching this discussion with us right now with Tom, and you've never ever subscribed to a podcast ever in your life, Fat Leonard is a good place to start, I can tell you that. Tom, if people want to find out more about how to get to the Fat Leonard podcast and subscribe to it, where do they go to?
Well, you go to our website. It's fatleonardpodcast.com. Or you can just go on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Fantastic. That was Tom Wright, the author or the co-author of The Billion Dollar Whale. He's the co-founder of Project Brazen. Still working together closely with his partner in crime, so to speak, Bradley Hope. And if you missed any part of this episode, just head on to astroawani.com. Look for Tom Wright. Look for Fat Leonard. Look for Notepad. We are all there and everywhere else on the net. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye. Tom, thanks very much.
Thank you.